Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvetterani, your host for this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for listening in this bit chilly, but somewhat mild Tuesday morning. And I hope wherever you are, whether you're commuting to work right now, whether you're already at work, whether you're at home, wherever you are, that you're safe, comfortable, and having a good time. And I hope this hour provides more of that. So before we get started with today's episode, I just want to acknowledge that this program is broadcast on the unceded and ancestral lands, the Hokomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been on these lands since time immemorial. And to start off today's episode of Speak Up, before we get into any actual speaking up, I'm going to be playing a track from a local band that I have grown quite fond of, Bloom Effect. Why not start off the morning with some local shoegaze? This is off of their EP that released back in September, I believe called Ocelon. And this track is titled Suspendo. So once again, Bloom Effect, Suspendo, only on a CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Make sure you stay tuned. We'll be right back. reporting from New Westminster, BC. This is Danny Nazvetarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Groove Cat Books and Records is a local business in New Westminster, BC, facing what can be described as increasingly common economic challenges that are being seen by many small businesses throughout the Lower Mainland and British Columbia. The store's owners, as well as husband and wife team, John and Kat Hughes, haven't been shy about this fact, and have now found a unique way to hopefully sustain Groove Cat through the support of their community. Inspired by the One Red Paperclip project that led to a series of exchanges that started with a paperclip and ended with a house, they decided to create their own sort of red paperclip challenge titled the Groove Cat Barter Challenge. Starting with the exchange of a single cat-shaped paperclip, the goal of the challenge is to see if they're able to exchange upwards to an item that would financially aid their business. To learn more about the challenge, as well as what has been exchanged so far, CJSF took a trip down to Groove Cat Books and Records. We spoke with John Hughes about the project, as well as the store's current situation.
I mean, essentially, since we started here, we've had some great support from people in New Westminster. We love the community. We love the people who come to our shop. It's very difficult to make bills every month, especially with the rents climbing. And we're stuck with something called the triple net lease, which makes it such that we're responsible not only for a base rent, but for random maintenance costs, which can be billed to us really at any time, and we're to the tune of $2,500 last April, as well as paying property taxes on property that we don't own. And so we're kind of at the mercy of what those rates are like. And it really last year nearly torpedoed us. We very nearly went under. And so we thought, you know what? We love what we do. We love the community. Let's try this and see where it goes. See if we can make sort of trade up. And people are well aware that, you know, they're contributing with all of this. And it's not simply, something that we're orchestrating in a vacuum. What we're attempting to do here is to be able to trade so that we can, you know, make something of value that ultimately we'd perhaps be able to auction or trade for cash so that we can make some back bills and continue going forward. It's a bit of a trouble ahead, trouble behind kind of a scenario right now. But I think the part that makes us unique in what we do with our particular challenge is that because we're not just a bookstore, we're also a publishing arm. We're a Cosmic Cranium Press. We've published a couple of books. We would want to create a third one. We don't even have a working title for it right now, but basically the idea is that we would, once we've been able to barter for the cost of printing and editing the book, we would create a book about this entire process. Proceeds from the sale of that book would go to help out vulnerable populations here in New Westminster, of which there are many. And so as far as I know, that's not been done before. I could be wrong about that, but I've not been able to find it anywhere. So I believe that makes us unique as far as where this challenge is meant to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not just about sustaining this business, but also uplifting the community as well, giving back in that sense.
Absolutely. We're without the community, we're nothing, and that means everybody in the community. And yes, a hand up for people who might be struggling right now is really important for us to engage in. We don't exist in a vacuum here, quite obviously. Everybody who is in this community matters, and we want to do everything we can to help them out, and hopefully this process can achieve that to some end.
Could you talk a bit about the trades that have been made so far?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we began with a single red paperclip. Well, actually, yeah, it was red. It was cat-shaped paperclip and a bookmark. So cash value pretty close to zero. A very generous author, a man named Brian Antonsen, who I've known for quite some time, saw our post, and he is a best-selling author. He's got a book called Slumax Gold, which is selling very well. He signed a copy of it and agreed to exchange it for the paperclip. From the paperclip, we swapped it for a designer handbag valued at around $200. From a bit of a mystery woman. We had her phone number and now we don't. And we've tried to track her down online. And yeah, anyway, hopefully she comes in to check in on the process at some point, because that was a very generous donation that she made. And her name was Diane. That's all I can remember about her. Anyway, another local person who'd actually moved to the community just this last summer, her name is Kelly, had a copy of Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale, first edition signed, which she exchanged for the coach bag. I mean, this is an extremely generous offer. I mean, looking at the value in terms of cash, what we've seen online with it, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 to $1,500, and that's where it sits at the moment. We've tried to do a few promotions to try and move that along. I understand that is a fairly it's a big ask to try and sort of pole vault over the value of around, you know, somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500. People would have to think very long and hard about how to make that happen. And so we're kind of there. That's kind of where things sit at the moment as far as the trades go.
I'm really curious about this book that you were talking about. In my head, the way you describe it is like each chapter would sort of be describing the experience and the sort of personal aspects of each trade.
I think that's kind of the minutiae of it. I mean, yes, I would want to detail as much of that as possible. I think bigger picture, what we're looking at is this entire structure that we're looking at economically, socially, culturally at the moment is failing a lot of people. There's so much need out there. And the fact that since the pandemic, the number of homeless people in this community has proliferated, that is absolutely not good enough. People deserve a home. The community of New Westminster deserves to have a bustling main street of shops which have meaning and cultural significance to them. These are the reasons that I want to tell the story about this book through this book. And so, yes, well, the individual trades, I'm sure there'll be some touching on, you know, I did this because X, Y, and Z. You know, everybody has their own reasons. I'm not going to put words in anybody's mouth. My sense so far is they believe in the cultural significance of the bookshop here and the support for local artists and authors and musicians, etc., that we offer here, as well as the need to help out those who are really struggling right now without a roof over the head or enough to eat. That simply is not good enough to live in a society where there's plenty and people are still struggling to get their basic needs met. So it's we have to be careful not to try and do too much in a book like this. But the point being that I feel that these ideas are very tightly linked. The notion that a place that is, it's got books, it's got music, it's got art, and the people who form the community as a whole, not everyone is seeing their needs met. I feel like if that wholeness, if that approach is taken on the whole and discussed in a way that links them in a way that is cogent and uses evidence that shows that these ideas are completely linked and not distinct from one another, then that I think will be the pressure point of the book for people who are looking at it and perhaps have positions of power who can make changes, and as well as giving the book the significance that it likely could have and the legitimacy that it requires.
Yeah, it's all sort of like intersectional in a way, right? How can a small business sustain if the community that it resides in is struggling in the way that it is?
Precisely. I mean, you know, sure, that's not across the board. I mean, like anything in life, some are having an easier go of it than others, and that's just the way things are. However, at the end of the day, I don't think any of us have the right to simply write off those who are not doing well, and that's No matter how people got there, to simply say I'm comfortable and leave it at that. Again, I've said this phrase a few times here, not good enough. It's not good enough for people who don't have enough to just ignore them. And we're hoping that this process can be helpful in that regard.
Mm-hmm. You know, this red paperclip challenge isn't just for Groovecat, it's for the community.
That is what we have in mind. Yeah, I mean, and this isn't to disparage anybody who does a challenge similarly for their own reasons. I can't pretend to know what somebody's reasons are for doing something like this. My understanding is that the Red Paperclip Challenge has been done many, many times. I mean, who wouldn't want to try something like that if there was some a way to make it go for whatever ends you choose to achieve? For us, it's about staying power here in New West, this community that we love so much, as well as wanting to look out for people that were, even though we're struggling right now, there are people who are struggling harder and worse and having a harder time. And for us to be able to, if we can do anything to help those people, people in our community who are meaningful and citizens here, then yes, we will do what we can to help make their lives to improve their lives as much as we possibly can. And I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of parachuting in do-gooder here. It is a process of wholeness and wanting to look out for people who might need a hand up.
Mm-hmm. I believe those were the main questions I had regarding this barter challenge. Thank you so much for taking the time. But if there's anything else regarding this challenge or anything going on at Groovecat that you want people to know about, what would that be?
Well, I will say that it was really cool to hold in my hands a copy, a first edition of The Handmaid's Tale, a book that is, I mean, come back in an enormous way over the past few years, in a book that Margaret Atwood herself signed. Really cool experience, you know, perhaps Canada's best known and most talented author of all time. That's been really cool. Sure, there are lots of things going on at Groovecat Books and Records and our publishing arm, Cosmic Cranium Press. I'll hold off on turning it into some kind of a commercial for it. Though I will throw this out there, a plug for our book, Canada is Not the 51st Effing State, which we released in October and had a major signing event here at the store for from many of the contributors. We signed, I think there were probably 7 or 8 of us who signed it. It's a book of, I think, 10 essays, 11 essays. And we signed the book and sent it to Donald Trump at the White House. We've not yet heard back from him, which is kind of strange. I thought by now we would have had a clear and cogent response from the White House, but still waiting. So there's that.
Once again, that was our conversation with John Hughes, co-owner of Groovecat Books and Records in New Westminster, BC. We spoke about the Groovecat Barter Challenge, their take on a red paperclip exchange, which has so far rewarded them with a first edition signed copy of The Handmaid's Tale. We will make sure to update all of you as soon as another exchange occurs. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, we are back with Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That was our interview with John Hughes of Groovecat Books and Records in New Westminster, BC. They're currently in the middle of a red paperclip challenge and have exchanged all the way up to a first edition signed copy of The Handmaid's Tale, which is apparently valued at $1,000 to $1,500. So we will see where that challenge goes. And as soon as we have any updates, we'll let you know. Groovecat is a great book and record store in New West. I love it there. You walk in, they have a beautiful cat named Chester. Just a lot of great things going for that store, and I wish them all the best. So, yeah, hope you enjoyed. And if you have anything that you think would be good to exchange, then go on by. Yeah, All right. The next interview that we have for today on Speak Up is from QP2278, specifically their executive committee based in UBC. Earlier in December, I'd done an interview with the TSSU, the Teaching Support Staff Union here at Simon Fraser University, regarding a decision that had been made that acknowledged graduate research assistants as being employees under the labor board, meaning that they were part of the union and also eligible for wages that were not within the realm of $2 an hour. One thing I didn't realize before going into this interview is that while that had been a success for graduate research assistants here at Simon Fraser University, a completely conflicting decision had been made for the same type of employee, graduate research assistants, GRAs, at UBC. So I wanted to learn about that and talk about that. So I was able to get in contact with Jessica Wolf, the vice president of QP2278, and Drew Hall, the president of QP2278. They were kind enough to speak with me at length about this, and here is that interview.
Yeah, so it's kind of a complicated situation because not only has this been like a multi-year long process for research assistants at UBC and at Simon Fraser University, but also we're now in a place where the labor board has issued two different conflicting decisions on this issue. So the organizing of research assistants at Simon Fraser University started, I think, in 2019. And so their campaign has been going for, 7 years now? The campaign at UBC to organize graduate research assistants started in 2022. In the spring of 2023, the campaign at UBC reached enough union cards signed to qualify for automatic certification. So pretty much if you are organizing a union drive in BC and more than 55% of the workers in that kind of proposed group of workers sign a union card, then that generally gets automatically certified. And so that would have qualified for automatic certification until UBC raised an objection to that that certification. After that, there were many in-person hearings and legal submissions to the labor board from both UBC side and the union side, you know, making arguments, trying to address the central question of are graduate research assistants workers under the labor code. And so the labor board took about 2 years to make that decision. And for our decision, they actually sided with UBC and decided that research assistants are not workers under the labor code. So that was a really disappointing and frustrating decision that came out earlier this year.
Can I clarify? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there were these two separate hearings with the labor board happening at the same time, at least for most of this waiting process, where ours ultimately ended in a denial and the TSSU file ended with GSRAs being considered employees. It's not like the labor board was making an ultimate decision on graduate research assistants being employees under the labor code. The vice chairs involved in each of our respective hearings were making decisions based on the arguments and evidence presented in each case. So there are two different people making those decisions with two different sets of like information, where like obviously we feel that the situations are similar and the decisions should both be that are employees, but that is how they ended up with those seemingly conflicting outcomes. And so now our negative decision came out before the TSSU one, and immediately after our decision, our application was denied, we applied for a reconsideration. And then once the TSSU decision came out, the labor board asked for our union and UBC to make submissions about the TSSU decision in in our application for reconsideration. So they still haven't decided if our application will be reconsidered. And now we've made submissions about the TSSC decision towards that end.
Yeah, so it's a lot of confusing back and forth and complicated by the Labor Board having two separate panels make two separate decisions about something which is, you know, substantively similar, you know, between here and Simon Fraser University. You know, graduate students are doing research and supporting the bottom line of the university and contributing towards publications and getting research grants and the research output of both of these large research institutions in functionally the same way. But now we're in this situation where we have these two conflicting legal decisions and a lot more confusion for everyone.
Like you said, the situations of graduate research assistants at SFU and that of UBC are quite similar structurally. What was the justification given by the Labor Board in this case? I know these were two separate bodies, two separate people or groups of people, but in this case, like, was it clear what the argument or reasoning was for that decision?
Ultimately, in our decision, which did not reference the TSSU situation at all because it came out first, UBC's argument, I think, centered around how graduate students on scholarship and graduate students with stipends are treated the same. And since the ones on scholarship are not workers, the ones on stipends can't be workers. I mean, and also just the general idea that, like, this work is benefiting us as students towards our degrees, so somehow that means it can't be work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of their arguments were kind of centered around, you know, this is an academic project that is required for the degree requirements of, like, a master's or a PhD. The university says that that's mutually exclusive from something that can be considered work under the labor code. And ultimately, the vice chair who was making the decision and for the UBC case, the decision itself, and you can find it on the BC Labor Relations Board website if you'd like to read an exceedingly long document. The analysis of the actual decision was quite sparse in our decision, and most of it seemed to kind of echo the university's arguments without really kind of substantially addressing the arguments that were raised by the union and the organizing campaign. And so that's one of the main reasons why we are, you know, applying for reconsideration, because not only do we disagree with the outcome of the decision, obviously, you know, we are of the opinion that research is work and it should be treated as work. But also the decision itself, we think was, you know, didn't meet the sufficient level of analysis that would justify making such a decision.
Yeah. And I think part of it was just failing to take this certain approach of recognizing, like, our charter right to unionize and, like, the spirit of that right. UBC had a lot of witnesses on the faculty side that were, like, giving examples of how great they treat their grad students. And so, like,